I'm Clint Emerson, and welcome to Season 2 of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenarios I put my guests through. From hostage situations to natural disasters, carjackings, active shooters, and more, if you're looking for the skills necessary to survive these situations, then this is the show for you. Welcome to another episode of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenario I put my victims through. Today, we've got a very special guest, a badass that was in the last book, 100 Deadly Skills Combat Edition. He is probably most known for his Basic Dude Stuff videos that have gone viral, and I personally love them. I can't get enough of them. In fact, I watch them like three or four times each time. But my producers are good at putting together target packages, so let's see. Let me go ahead and pull this out. And we're going to see what they dug up about old Pat. Ooh, it's almost a novel here. We'll see. And because I'm going blind, I'm going to go ahead and... All right. Wow, look at this. A lot of stuff about you in here, Pat. Okay, so Pat McNamara, retired Spec Ops, T-Max Inc., which is Tactics, Marksmanship, Adventure Concepts, Security, born in 65. What year is that vehicle? What year is that car you got?
65.
I knew that matched up. This guy, Pat McNamara, spent 22 years in the United States Army in a myriad of special operations units. When he worked in a premier special missions unit, he became an impeccable marksman, shooting with accurate lethal results and tactical effectiveness. He retired from the Army's premier hostage rescue unit as a sergeant major. That's no easy feat. And has become a well-known expert in the tactical training and fitness, along with other social media influencer capabilities like the University of Badassery. He's got a podcast, University of Badassery. You also have a schoolhouse that you call your squad. Mm-hmm. We'll dig into that. And then, of course, he trains shooting and beyond to just about everyone, to include law enforcement. And are you doing military guys as well?
Absolutely.
Yes. So now we've got T-Mac introduced here onto the show. Dude, thanks for coming on. It's awesome to have you here. It was awesome to have you part of Combat Edition. So thank you. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Clint. It was fun working on the Deadly Skills Combat Edition. You guys did an awesome job, especially considering, you know, you'd think that the amount of backside support that would go into that would be a dozen folks, but you travel with like one guy.
Yeah. It was, I keep telling people, man, I don't even remember sleeping. It was 16 guys in 30 days. I got lucky because everyone was stuck at home. Now I wouldn't be able to replicate that. You know, here we are almost a year later and I would not be able to replicate that in that amount of time. Mm-mm. But yeah, coast to coast, 11,000 miles. And man, to have you a part of it was just an honor. Really was.
A lot of fun. I appreciate having, the opportunity to be a part of it. So
yeah. And I've got a special, because you're rare. And in the fact that, well, you're rare. You're just a rare guy. Like I said, you're like a WWE guy, a nice glass of bourbon wrapped up in the American flag. That's kind of how I describe the Pat McNamara. I just like saying your name, Pat McNamara. Pat
cool. McNamara. I like the way you say it.
But you being in the book, great skills. Obviously, you know your shit, and on top of that, you entertain. And I think that's the key these days. Is if you're going to put out information, it has to be entertaining as well, in order for it to become sticky and people actually get it, retain it, and recall it under stress. Right?
Absolutely.
You've done a great job of that, man. It's awesome.
Thank you, sir.
And because you appreciate artwork, I knew the book, you'd love it. But even more so, I have something special coming to you. I'll mail it out as soon as I got it. You're going to dig
it.
Something you can hang on your wall. All right. So what did they dig up on you today? Let's see here.
Oh, shit. Spooky.
Okay. So let's just dive right in. Does saying Delta Force out loud feel as weird as to you as saying SEAL Team 6 feels to me?
Yep, absolutely. I never say it on like interviews, podcasts. You know, if the guy mentions it, fine.
Yeah.
But you know, I just like you just talk in generic terms.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah. USSOC, unit, you know, that kind of stuff. But yes, right. It absolutely does.
Yeah, I tend to still just get like that. Almost like this weird like betrayal feeling if I even go down that path. It's important to note that both names were unclassified years ago. Mm-hmm. I think after Obama came out and kind of said it all along with yep. Biden, they said, I'm not going politics, it's just the truth. They yep. mentioned a lot of names in some of their speeches, and so SOCOM was forced to unclassify these names, and you know, now everybody knows them.
Yep.
But while we're on that topic, you know, is there any particular story or situation that comes to mind hanging out in the special operations community that's that goes down the line of, you know, managing a crisis, you know, but whether it was for your guys, or for yourself, a situation where, you know, you're probably caught off guard, but you managed to get through it because you're a seasoned, experienced guy, you leveraged your training. What initially pops in your mind in your experience? Like some, it could be bad, it could be just bad luck, you know, you name it. What do you got?
Well, you know, man, as soon as you asked that, the gears started turning.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we didn't rehearse this. I didn't have like notes to, but there's been so many of those. And I think the first thing that goes through most guys' minds is a moment of pause, you know, like size up the situation.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. It's like, all right, this isn't going as planned.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then coming up with a contingency plan, even if it's not ideal. And some require haste, and some, of course, you've got a little bit more time to digest whatever it was you have to unfuck. But, let me see. Do you want a specific one? I'm trying to think of a specific one, like where you have to go into contingency planning mode quickly. I mean, there's more in training than in like real world. No. There's a couple real world ones where. one just popped into my head.
All right.
But it actually panned out. Pifwick hits. I'm going to be a little vague, you know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, persons indicted for war crimes. There was one guy we were going after, and we rehearsed for about a year on this one guy. And the TTPs I had developed, you know, this was my baby.
Right.
So I was very excited to see this tactic, technique, procedure in full play. And ended up that we did this hit broad daylight, 12:30 in the afternoon. So the key was to hide in broad daylight, basically. You know, because if you're being sneaky, you're going to look sneaky. Mm-hmm. But if you're just hiding in broad daylight, you know, nobody's really aware. And that's what we did with this one. So it was, you know, tracksuits, leather jackets, body odor, unshaven, this kind of shit. And we're setting up this ambush site with cars rolling by, and we were actually posing as people working, you know, it's like street workers chipping ice and stuff like that. Because
nice.
When we went up to on the ambush site, guys were doing that. They were chipping ice, and they thought we were relief. Well, damn, man, what a stroke of luck that was. So we just pulled them off the side, said, hey, go down here, smoke these cigarettes. And we just took their tools and kept chipping ice.
Nice.
And we're setting up this ambush site, and there's a lot going on. There's several moving pieces and parts. So we're blocking traffic a quarter mile down that way, a quarter mile this way. Meanwhile, our HVT, we're letting him through, but he doesn't know, you know, what's going on. And this came down to seconds. You know, so imagine planning this thing for a year, and it came down to literally like a window of plus or minus 2 seconds.
Damn.
And then 10 seconds prior to this guy coming through, a cop car rolls through. Now, we had devices on this bridge, you know, but it was very benign to the everyday person. Mm-hmm. And I'm peeking through the guardrail. I mean, just a slit of my eyeball. And I have a balaclava down over my face. And all I could see is just the cars and the drivers going through. All right, car, this is get the last one. All right, last car is coming through now. And it's a cop car. And he slows down. And he's checking out. He sees something is wrong. And we're going, oh, my God. This is a contingency we didn't plan for. This is going to scoot everything up. Uh-huh. And he kept driving. And I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
But then, so the hit went down real fast. It was like a minute and 30 seconds after a year of planning, right? So on target, about a minute and 30 seconds. Last minute, we brought a guy with us, an officer who had just been assigned. He just came across the hall, just been assigned to a Saber squadron. And we were adamantly opposed to him doing this, but command wanted him to get some, you know, on the ground time in the leadership mode. And adamantly opposed to it. Good guy. Nonetheless, he did not rehearse with us. And he was just spazzing out like crazy. The hit was just finishing and he assaults the pin car. He assaults the pin vehicle,
right.
Our guys. But he doesn't know it's our guys. He doesn't know because he wasn't part of the planning. And he's smashing the window and AR in the face. And they're going, hey, bro, we're one of you. So,
yeah.
But that was one where we didn't have to go into contingency planning, but it was so close, you know?
Yeah.
But there's more in training, more of them. Because, you know, and I did a podcast yesterday. I was explaining to this guy. He was very... He really didn't understand military and stuff like that. And he was saying, you know, asking questions about, you know, when were you most nervous? And I said, dude, you know, I think that most special ops guys, we train for worst case scenarios. So in combat deployments, combat operations, there's not, you know, I mean, there's nothing that we haven't seen before except for the two-way shooting range. Everything else we're able to compartmentalize, you know, because we're all hardwired the same. And as I'm telling him this, I'm saying, bro, it's really not that big of a deal. It's a big deal to you, but to us in the special ops community, it's really not that big of a deal.
Yeah, and he couldn't
wrap his head around that. But
yeah,
so more snafus in training, definitely. And, you know, and they would happen in stuff like EDRIs, big exercises where you're graded. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, the bottom just fell out and we're going to fail this EDRI and let's split the force and get two guys and run over this mountain and drag a freaking Akio through the snow. And, you know, so all the time in training that crap happened. But
You make good points, right? I mean, that's where training and for listeners out there, an HVT is a high value target and PIFWICs are basically, you know, these bad guys that haven't been captured yet that did a bunch of illegal stuff during a war. And so I think it's awesome dressing up like dirty Europeans and going out and getting it done in broad daylight. And who would have thought, you know, I guess there was some language capability there. If you're able to tell the guys to go smoke some cigarettes, we're going to take over with your tools. Yeah.
Yeah. That, we learned, cool. Like I still know several lines in Serbo-Croatian, you know, like Rukin Naglavo, Izadji Izauto, shit that I can't use out there. Like, you know, put your hands on your head and get out of the car. Nikretai, don't move. Nikretai.
That's cool. I've got some key Arabic ones like door, you know, like is basically just short for chest. Get on your chest. You know, I don't even want to try and pronounce the rest.
Right.
But yeah, that's good stuff. A cop coming, 5-0, and as anybody knows, foreign intel, law enforcement, I mean, these are all still considered bad guys for us when we're trying to get work done, without a doubt. So yeah, that had to have been a little nerve-wracking. And then the other highlight is training for a year, for a minute, 30 seconds. I mean, yeah. that is the story of special operations, right? I mean, we train, train for sometimes just seconds. And to make a difference, that sometimes huge differences, seconds can make a huge difference, you know, globally. It's it's a pretty amazing community to be a part of. And you have days you miss it?
So I have this conversation a lot.
Yeah.
I've been retired since 05, and I still, to this day, at least once a week, have, it's sort of a recurring dream.
A moment.
That I've been recalled, you know? Yeah. Or that that I'm somehow able to enlist for just a 2-year stint, just 2 years.
Yeah,
and it's a recurring dream, and the dream continues that, you know, I'm so happy to be back. I'm a little bit slower, you know, and the guys are kind of making fun of me, all the young studs, and then I don't know what the equipment is. I'm like, what is this freaking new gadget? And they're all, and then I don't know what chalk I'm on as far as like Hilo lift. I'm like, hey, come on, guys, don't fuck with me, bro. Which bird am I on? But it's always the same. It's always the same dream, you know, where I'm just a little bit behind, but they're happy I'm there. And you know, yeah, I miss it like freaking crazy. And I tell you what, man, if they started up a reserve unit, I'll be knocking at the door.
Yeah, I bet. I would have to argue with you about you being slower than the new guys. You stay on top of your skill set pretty damn good. I'd say better than most. I know you're better than me. That's for damn sure. That's I have the same moments. I go back and forth. I think, you know, the big thing is just the guys, right? I think we all know that. It's the like-minded, the camaraderie, dudes that get it, right? I mean, it's tough. The civilian side is fun, cool, and it's been great, but finding people that actually get it, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. So, you know, you're a career guy like I am, and you were in the same unit for a long freaking time. And I explained this to people. It was maybe a couple years ago, and somebody was saying, hey, what about, you know, bringing like special ops type of leadership training to the, commercial world, you know?
Yeah.
And how can you replicate that kind of mindset? I said, bro, you can't, man. You can't. You develop, when you're in the same unit, working with the same guys for years at a time, you develop a relationship with this individual that is, it's very authentic. And it's, I mean, you're closer to these guys than you are with your wife.
Yeah.
You've seen them at their absolute best, absolute highs and absolute worsts, absolute lows. You've seen them elated, you've seen them scared. And there's times when you looked across at them and you went, holy, and you're looking into their soul and they're doing the same back to you. And you're saying to yourself, eh, this probably won't hurt that much. And you know they're saying the same thing, you know, looking back at you. So it's an intimacy that you cannot replicate anywhere else. I mean, it's intimate, you know, that kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. So I still have, when I have these dreams, a few of those guys are in the dreams as well.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I have those same moments. And it's, I agree. The corporate world wants all the experiences from us and somehow turn their workforce into a big fighting machine that just, you know, turns money, right? Every second. But you're right. The reality is there's a big weed out process first. So if you really did it right, you wouldn't have 85% of your workforce left by the time we got done with you. Mm-hmm. And so certain things apply, certain things don't. But the weed out, the attrition, to finally get to the point where you're with the guys that you're right, you can get that intimate with and get involved in, you know, God, it's everything, right? It's at work, after work. I mean, it's a lifestyle brotherhood that can't be replicated anywhere else.
Yep.
Now I know, shifting gears a little bit and staying with the theme of, you know, survival. I remember when I was out there with you, I'd asked you about, you know, hey Pat, when's the last time you were in a fight? And you told me a great story, man. I want you to kind of repeat it here. Is you're at a concert. Yep. And yeah, some guy decided, I can't even imagine. I mean, you already look kind of like, all right, that's the kind of guy. He's got the look, a look that says, don't fuck with him. But yeah, retell me that story and how you handled it. I think it's a great for lessons learned for people out there.
Well, so It was a Slayer concert, Slayer Lamb of God. So Lamb of God was on first, Slayer came up next. I brought my wife with me, and I don't do anything anymore unless I'm like buying first class tickets or, you know, good seats.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done with the nosebleed section. Plus there's, for the sake of security, you know, it's you're more secure that way because there's more outs. You know, when I'm that close to stage, I've got to exit over there and exit over there and then two right behind me. And I'm not going to be caught in all of the muck. Mm. So we're enjoying the show and we're in the first class section, you know, we're down right close to the stage and, a party of drunkards kept coming down the aisle and you know, they're coming from the nosebleeds and they kept messing with this security guard. He's just some kid, you know, he's probably 21 mm-hmm. and he's about 120 pounds soaking wet with a shirt on that says security. And he's got Ray-Bans on and they kept messing with him. He's on the gate. So that way nobody passes the gate, you know, into like the stage, because we're just beyond the VIP section. So he's blocking the VIP section. And they kept messing with him. And I'm looking around at others, because now I'm building assets because I'm about to intervene. So mm-hmm. I'm looking around and I can see guys going, you know, rolling their eyes, and because he's disrupting this stuff. So I tell him once, I say, hey, move back, and the security guard tells him, hey, push back that way, and they do, but they come back down. And he's in this kid's face, I mean right in his face. Now I have to intervene. Mm-hmm. So I grab him just by his chest and right under his neck, and I push him back. I just give him a big shove and he falls backwards, and he takes a couple steps backwards and he's with his three buds, and I step into the aisle. And I'm sweating my ass off. I got my shirt off. I mean, I've been headbanging. I've been, you know, like rocking. I do not want this show messed up for me. And they start approaching. They start closing the gap. And I go, nope. I go into my hands up mode, non-threatening posture. And I said, nope. And I even told him, I said, trust me, bro, you don't want any of this. Trust me. And I'm yelling it because it's loud. And he closes the gap, and I ba-boom, one to him, and he fall. I mean, he fell faster than gravity. You know, I mean, just whoosh, sack of potatoes, boom. But I didn't knock him out. He got right back up, took a couple steps back, got with his buds, and now there's a massive fight. Because all of these assets, I'm like, yeah, whoosh, whoosh. There's fists everywhere. Now I'm trying to break up the fight that I started. I don't want these guys to get kicked out, you know?
Right.
So a couple more fists were thrown, and then all the security comes down and they're, you know, quickly interrogating us, and everybody say, no, he's good. He didn't start it. He had his hands up. These guys started it. And it was over just like that. They said, all right, just enjoy the show.
More with special operator Pat McNamara after the break. And for more episodes with badass combat vets like Pat, don't forget to browse the Can You Survive This podcast archives on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Who would have thought, you know, in our older years, you'd still have to face the idiots on the planet? And I think that's what people forget, right? They get a little older and they think, oh, I don't need to go to the gym. Oh, I don't need to do any of that stuff. I'm retired now.
Yep.
But it's really, I mean, threats are everywhere at any given time. And, that's one of the skills you covered in the book is hands up, right?
Yep.
Get in that mm-hmm. de-escalation mode and putting your hands up or whatever it is, you got to train to it, right? So let's talk about it. You got your hands up means, hey, I don't want any trouble, but I'm ready to fight, right?
Exactly. When I do that, boom, when I put the hands up, there's a light switch that goes off in my head. That means game on. If you close the gap, game on.
Right.
I've made that as soon as I do this, boom, nope. And I do that. There's a decision has been made. Red light, green light. I am not going to approach. I am not going to. Mm-hmm. I am not going to be the aggressor. I want to de-escalate if I can. And I am going to give you every opportunity not to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Every single one. But I've already got the advantage. My hands are up. Ah, bah, 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 bah. And I have liability now because people are seeing. So even if I did get punched out, I'm an innocent victim, because I'm going, but as soon as they enter that zone and if you box a lot, spar a lot, you become very, very familiar with that zone because you've been punched in the face so many times.
Yeah.
So that zone becomes this space of awareness where somebody enters it, that's your property. You own that real estate. And this is mine. This is my, you just invaded my personal property, which is my space. This is property. I own this right. little chunk of land around me. So I am going to defend it and I am going to be ferocious. You know, I'm going to strike with precision, with spontaneity, with aggressiveness, and with lethality. It's going to hurt really, really bad. And then usually every time it's happened, they all go, everyone, you know, because you have to get ready for a number three or something like that, or a knee to the chest or a clinch.
Yeah. But
every single guy's gone down with a one and a two. Boom, boom. Every single one of them.
Yeah.
And you know, it's that Bruce Lee-ism of, I'm paraphrasing, I don't fear the man who knows 10,000 things one way, but the man who knows one thing and can use it 10,000 ways.
Right.
But, you know, that's been, I have probably 5 primary tools and I work them all of the time. And I remember getting that lesson from my wrestling coach in high school. He said, Patrick, if you practice a move 1,000 times, you'll be able to use it in every match. Mm-hmm. And mine was the throwdown, fireman's carry throwdown.
Oh, yeah.
And it even had a backup. If the guy sprawled, I go into a dump. But when I was in my senior year of high school, I got a takedown record. And it was that move because in the summer, I practiced that move at the college with the college wrestling team. So proof is in the pudding, you know? Because now it's like almost an intuitive level-driven task because you've done it so many freaking times, you know?
Right.
Initially, you think about it. You think about it, cognitive thought, until you don't have to think about it. And then it just becomes a subconscious level or intuitive level-driven task.
Yeah, and that's that muscle memory piece, right? Yep. I mean, you're training. I know you get asked the question all the time, so do I. What's the martial art I should do? What should I go? where do I learn how to fight? And it's for me, I'm always telling people, like, look, it's not about the art as much as it is about the moves and then picking the ones that you are good at and mastering them, right?
Yep.
Mastering the basics is what makes you advanced. I think we've learned that being at national level commands. It's not that we were being taught any kind of special ninja shit. We just master the basics, you know, and you master those to the point where they become muscle memory. And all of a sudden now, yeah, you kind of look like a ninja. You act like a ninja, right. But it's not because you were taught some secret stuff. It's because you just broke down the basics and made them just part of you. And now you can pull them off at any given time, regardless of the threat. Yeah. The 1-2, it's one of the other skills you covered. So that's a jab with a cross, right?
Yep.
So are you right or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Now, do you train both south and you got a south pole?
A little bit, and probably not as much as I should.
Yeah.
And this is it's a fault of mine that I encourage people to do. I said, you know, we guys are notorious for practicing what we are good at.
Mm-hmm.
So we should get outside of that box and practice shit that we suck at. Yeah. So I do a lot of bilateral stuff, left side, right side, especially in shooting. I don't practice both sides as much as I should. But I'm aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great point. Being ambidextrous is such a great skill to have. And supposedly, you know, it's a brain thing, right? It's, if you can force yourself to do it, you're actually giving your brain an advantage. You get a physical advantage out of it, but you're actually opening up some pathways in your head that aren't there by just sticking with one side.
Yeah. Cause you're exercising the poetic lobe of your brain, you know, the creative side.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you work, even if you're like signing your name or learning to write with your support side, with your, you know, your weak hand.
Yeah.
You're still exercising that poetic versus the analytical side. And it makes, you know, there's some crossover there.
Yeah.
Makes the other side work better.
create some pathways. Yeah, that's cool stuff. Now, we're talking about guns, and I've been saying it. I'm going to continue saying it just so people take it seriously, is that this is the year of the active shooter. We've already seen over 100 mass shootings here in the United States. We're on our way to having a record year because people have been cooped up in their houses. You know, substance abuse on the rise, relationships went south, mental health is out of whack. A lot of reasons. All the reasons why people grab a gun and shoot people are at a, are heightened. You know, they're exacerbated right now because of pandemic isolation. Guns. I know you get this question a lot, but because this is a whole new group of listeners, what do you recommend as far as being prepared for that that mass shooting?
Well, it definitely doesn't start with the gun, right? You have to keep your wits about you, stay situationally aware. And then also keep in mind that that moment of pause, even if it's like 2 seconds, might do you some good. Instead of, like, for instance, running with the sheeple, because the sheeple don't have a good course of action. They're following other sheeple.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you have to think, is this the best course? Do I run with all the sheeple, or do I seek cover, or maybe take a perpendicular route away from this scene? Versus, because what's not saying that they're trying to make you go that way?
Right.
They're trying to corral you into this position. But the other thing is, mobility equals survivability. It's hard to shoot a moving target. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, stay stationary. And then cover, you have to consider cover like terrain. Use it to the best of your ability until you find better cover.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to get hunkered down behind cover. I would say only carry if you're trained. I am opposed to people carrying, especially open carrying, if they have no training, because now they're more of a liability than they are an asset.
Yeah. And, no
doubt. You know, a guy who's open carrying he's basically has a sign on his chest that says, I am untrained. I don't know how to fight. I don't know how to shoot. I have a gun. So if you are unarmed and you have bad intentions, here, come and get mine. That's what open carry says to me.
Right.
I see it, open carry. But if you are trained, you need to be carrying wherever the law permits. You know, I think if you are really good, I tell people, like with me, a guy who shoots a pistol as well as me, it should be against the law for me not to carry into a mall or, you know, a venue like that.
I would agree with that.
I should be freaking chastised, man.
That's right.
Just the best way to get out of a bad situation is don't get there in the first place. So when it comes to mass shootings and stuff like that, you know, and don't ignore intuition. It's a gift we're all born with, but we kind of relinquish those primal skills of ours, you know, you know, quickly size up the situation quickly. But haste makes waste.
That's right.
You know? And, you know, if you just think run with the sheeple, it's not always the best recourse. You know, it might work, but that's not what I'm going to do.
those are all just awesome points. I think I agree. You can't start with the gun. People think, there's mass shooting, I'm going to go buy a gun. Or home defense, they think buy a gun. When the reality is there's perimeters, there's so much more than the gun should be the last resort.
Right.
And, I agree. Distance, right? Distance from the shooter increases survivability. Make sure you're identifying those routes and cover before anything ever happens so that you know exactly what your outs are. And then the sheeple, right? Sheep people. And that is acknowledging the fact that we are all mammals and we have the mammalian reflex. So when a herd of people go running by, your natural instinct is to run with them, but isn't necessarily the right direction. And you and I both know that shots fired indoors is much different than shots fired outdoors. Shots indoor are omnidirectional. You can't tell where the shots came from.
Right.
And so what happens is in some of these active shooting scenarios, people inadvertently run towards gunfire because they think they are running away from it.
Away from it.
And so to piggyback on your point, you've got to take that 2 seconds. You got to look, listen, feel. Trust your eyes more than your ears in those situations. Look for the bad guy. Identify that where exactly they are and make sure you're going the right direction. Those are all awesome points, Pat. Shifting gears a little bit more here.
Yep.
Tell us about, I think I've, you sent me your book several, I think it's been years now, a couple of years ago, and it's awesome. It should be out there more often in people's faces. Let's talk about your book, you know, the Sentinel kind of mindset and and everything you put into that.
Yeah. So I can't remember when I wrote that, but it's funny because it's so relative today, especially in 2020. Yeah. It became very, very relative. And it's a little bit outdated. So I'm really hoping to do a redo.
Okay.
Because I have stuff in there about, you know, like phone booths and carrying quarters with you and stuff like that.
Well, you know,
cool. Old school. And you know, and my cybersecurity is outdated on there as well. But so it came as kind of an epiphany moment. I was training some MARSOC guys, and one of them said, "Hey, can you write down a bunch of notes for me on protection?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Sure, yeah." And when I went back home, I started jotting down notes, and then it came as an epiphany that, you know what, this is shit that I do still nowadays. You know, not on an executive protection detail. I do these things now for my family. So I got to thinking, kept typing and typing it, and I typed for about 17 hours straight, just idea, just throwing ink onto paper, you know what I mean? Just banging it out. I could cut and paste later. You know, I could drag and drop later. But right now, let me just throw this shit down. And after like 17 hours, I had like 50, 60 pages.
Yeah.
And I went, holy shit, man, I know a lot of stuff. There's a lot of crap up there in the data bank. And I was accessing it. And I realized that, man, this is good information for everyday Joe. You know, how to be the agent in charge of your own executive protection detail.
Yes.
So you take what EP does, which for the audience members that don't know this, a lot of us special ops guys get tagged on freaking executive protection. Shitty, shitty freaking job. I, you know, as I retired, people have offered me, "Hey, can you do EP for so-and-so? And it's $100,000 for a week." I'm like, "Nope."
Yep. No thanks.
Hell no. Yeah. Whatever it is, you know, some exorbitant price tag. I'm like, "Nope." So you take what an executive protection detail does, which it's, that work is exhausting. You know, if you take Cooper's color code from white to red, white zombie mode, red fighting for your life, these guys are in the yellow to orange non-freaking stop, man, you know, days on end.
Yeah.
And you're living in somebody's hip pocket, and it's not glamorous, you know, that kind of work. You are working your freaking ass off. You are traveling in front of them to do advances, and then the advanced checklist, it's like 3 pages long. You're making comms with hospitals, with police chiefs, with airports, with restaurants, because, you know, your job isn't just it's not gunslinging. It's keeping him from embarrassing himself even.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was on one protecting an ambassador, he had pooped himself. And I was like, "Bro, nobody's going to know this, man." I got him into a port-a-john. It was in Tuzla, Eagle Base. And I said, "Strip your freaking pants off, and we're just going to throw these underwear away. Nobody's going to know, bro." You know, but that was my job. You know, yeah. He was real nervous, and he freaking,
yeah, that's, I was going to say, getting these guys coffee is, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you're wiping asses. That's you're getting your RN award on that one.
Yep. But so, you know, you take what an EP does. So the advance, the motorcade, the lead car, the follow car, the limo, the embassy, you know, the fortress, the advances, and you work it at a micro level. So now you're one person. Let's say you're the father of a family, and you've got kids. They're your precious cargo. They're your principal. And when you're driving, you're the limo driver. You're also the lead and the follow car driver. And, you know, when you, enter a restaurant, you're the advance force. You're just doing it on the fly. You're scanning real quick, checking where the emergency exits are. You know, you're scanning the parking lot real quick. You're not doing this like you're not trying to, you know, look like some kind of freaking armchair commando. You're doing it discreetly, but all that stuff is happening, you know, just on this minute level. And I think the one thing I talk about in more chapters than one is just having your wits about you, you know, being situationally aware, just being switched on. Because if I'm with my family, I'm in the yellow. Mm-hmm. If I'm out and about, I'm in the yellow. It's not freaking, you know, like dark yellow into orange, but I'm always in the yellow. It's permissive. The only time I'm in the white is when I'm at home.
Yeah.
You know, in my, even here, I'm not in the white because I've got a door closed. So I've got, you know, three loaded guns right here. I've got comms up. There's cameras, you know, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's permissible for me to be in the white when I'm in my recliner, watching my flat screen TV with a glass of bourbon.
Yeah. There we go.
I'm in chill mode.
Right.
But yeah, it's a cool little book. It's an easy read. A lot of good lessons because there's driving, there's working out, there's fighting, there's shooting, there's advanced stuff, there's some rough scenarios, there's a lot of military type of isms, like, you know, 5-point contingency plan and troop leading procedures and how you could apply those to everyday scenarios, you know. So
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah, I thought it was really well-rounded. I find myself, too, where it's a lot, you know, like 100 Deadly Skills, where you can kind of open it up anywhere in the book and learn something new. You know, you don't have to read it know, from cover to cover, mm-hmm. Which is always good for guys like us, right? Kind of,
right.
Yeah, we need the easy, kind of simple way sometimes in order to get the message. Yeah. Okay. So where can people find your book? How can people sign up for your course? I want to get all that knocked out before I put you through this scary scenario.
So I am at TMAX Inc. So both my IG, my website is TMAX Inc. TMACSINC.
Yeah.
And you could pretty much find out everything off of those two because everything's linked there. My combat strength training, the University of Badassery, book stuff, everything. Yeah. Almost everything is right there under TMAX Inc.
Yep. Yeah. You got a lot of cool stuff going on. And I know that, it's not difficult to find Pat. You just right. Google him and then you will find his ecosystem of badassery. Yeah. You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. More with Special Operator Pat McNamara after the break. All right, so now it's time to put you through this hypothetical survival scenario. Okay, I'll be asking you questions, and there'll be an A or B answer response. The only right ones are the ones that my producers came up with.
Cool.
But let's just go ahead and get started. All right.
Right on.
It's nighttime. You're relaxed at home, recliner, flat screen, bourbon, in a remote location, alone. Life is good, not a care in the world. White zone, right? Meanwhile, several miles away, one of your buddies from the unit, we'll just name him Jim, is using an ATM machine. Jim needs some cash to change into dollar bills. Suddenly, he gets hit over the head by an attacker from behind. And then there's a little bit of a scuffle. Okay? I know what you're thinking right now, right? So you're going to jump in your car and you're going to go to his rescue, go to his aid. But instead, mm-hmm. I know that that's something you would do, but you're not going to need to rescue Jim, okay? Because Jim is putting on the brakes right in front of your house right now. You hear a car come to a screeching halt.
Yep.
You're thinking to yourself, what the hell? All I wanted to do was drink my bourbon tonight. And a quote from Stephen J. Daniels. You're probably familiar with this quote. All of a sudden pops in your mind. A good friend will help you move. A true friend will help you move a body. Okay. Jim is he's panicking a little, to say the least.
Yep.
And the guy that tried to kill him at the ATM machine, well, let's just say things went horribly bad for that guy, because he's like you. He's a prepared guy. And even when surprised, he can take care of himself. Jim pops the trunk. There lies the attacker's body. All right. And at this point, you can't turn Jim away. You're going to help him. You've known each other for years. Plus, you're feeling a little tipsy and risky with the bourbon running through your blood. So, first question, do you A, get the body out of the trunk and start to strip it down of all its clothes and personal items, or B, move the vehicle around back to a more discreet location?
Neither one of those would I do, but I would move the vehicle around back to a more discreet location, but neither one would I do.
Okay, so we've got him on record. He's going to help you if you have a body. Okay, right. now that you are in a more discreet position, good answer. Let me mark this down. So that's 10 points. 10 questions, 10 points. Okay, you just got to pass. 70, I think, is passing in most countries. You got 10. All right, good job. So now that you are in a more discreet location, do you A, pull the body out, start to strip it down of its clothes, etc., or B, tarp the ground because things could get messy?
Well, once again, B, neither one of those would I do, but I'm going to pick B out of those. Yes.
Your attorney is sitting in the room, correct? All right. Okay. You've got the fucker out of the trunk, and now you've stripped him down. Do you A, grab a couple of 50-gallon steel drums, or B, grab your shovels and start digging?
Oh, it depends what I'm going to put in those drums. I mean, I forgot the acid, you know, because, oh my God.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a tough one.
Yes. So based on where this might be going, I'm going to pick A on that one. 50 gallon drums.
You are doing so good, buddy. That is correct. Yes. Note, land and thermal burials are both possible. But in this situation, we want this guy gone. We want him to be dust.
Right.
So yeah, you're going to do a thermal burial using steel drums. So good answer. I love it. Mm-hmm. Okay. You've got the attacker crammed into one barrel, and all personal belongings plus the tarp are also in there. Mm-hmm. Do you A, pour some gasoline in those barrels and get burning, or B, wait, maybe you need something a little hotter?
Yeah, I definitely need something hotter than gasoline. I ain't going to do it.
Again, good. I think you've done this before. All right. That is a good answer. All right. So that's right. You got to get something hotter. So you're off to the private airstrip nearby, which I know there's an airstrip right there near you. I did witness that. So A, you drive up to the airstrip, find a small plane, commandeer some jet fuel, or B, wait, you're gonna pull off, you need to get some distance between you and the airport, so you choose to go on foot. So do you A, just drive up to the airstrip and commandeer some jet fuel, or wait a second, we need to get some distance between us and our next action of grabbing fuel?
I'm gonna achieve separation. I'm gonna get some distance.
Right. There's cameras everywhere these days. Right. So you don't want your license plates associated with this this very friendly act. I mean, you're doing something for your buddy. I mean, all right.
That Jim, I gotta tell you, man, he's always up to shenanigans. Nothing but shenanigans.
Right. Which we all have buddies like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you're going to opt for discretion here. We don't want any chance of the security cameras linking your vehicle back to this acquisition of fuel. All right. Right. Good answer. Man, I'm pretty much sold that you've had to do this a couple times. All right. So you've pulled off the road discreetly, keeping your vehicle some distance away from the airstrip. You approach the airstrip on foot with discretion. Are you A, find a small plane and try and pry the fuel door open so Jim can siphon the fuel, or B, take a moment, right, and find a fuel truck? A or B?
oh, the fuel truck would be so much easier than siphoning. I mean, yes. I mean, way freaking easier.
I mean, I think it's good to have Jim do that and choke on right. some fuel, but, yeah. you know, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, siphoning regular gasoline isn't that bad, but if he gets a mouthful of JP4, that's going to jack him up.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad day. Okay, good job once again. You're going to want to not mess with the aircraft. It's easier, obviously, to pilfer your fuel from a fuel truck. Mm-hmm. A lot easier. So you get the fuel, you're heading back. Upon your return, it's about 3:30 a.m., right? Mm. Once you're back, you're standing in front of your steel drums. Do you A, start burning that body, or B, head to more of a desolate rural location with your jet fuel and your steel drum?
Well, especially since it's 3:30 in the morning, that light signature, that fire, is going to be... It's going to draw anybody in like moths to a flame.
Yeah.
So I'm going to head to a more discreet location. And because who knows, by then there might be a little bit of light too.
Yeah.
Granted, I'll be compromising myself because people could see me, but they won't see the fire for miles away either.
Damn. It's almost as if somebody gave you this scenario ahead of time. Because yes, ding, ding, ding. Desolate location is key. You're in the home stretch now, all right? So you're doing good. You're doing good. Okay, home stretch. You wait until about 5:30 a.m. to light it up, or you already answered this, or do you just start burning?
Right. So yeah, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait once again until there's a little bit of ambient light.
Yep. Yes. Yes, this method is going to put off a significant amount of smoke, so more easily spotted during the day. But it also is going to have this bright burning light that's easily spotted at night. So 5:30 a.m. may give you that sweet spot. It's not too dark. It's not too light. It'll minimize the visibility and the signature of both smoke and flame. Yeah, you nailed it without me even going over that part. Look at you.
Cool.
All right. Now that you're cooking, right, literally, you're going to, A, wait a couple of more hours while the content of the drum burns, or B, get the hell out of there.
Bro, I have to wait, man. I mean, I have to. It sucks that I'm going to have to wait, but I have to wait. I got to make sure this thing, for Jim, you know?
For Jim.
I can't just say, hey, Jim, you stay here. I'm going home.
That's right.
Because I don't trust Jim right now, man. Jim's made some really bad decisions. And now I'm part of this thing. He drugged me into it. So, Jim, I'm freaking hanging out, man.
Yep. Jim is definitely a liability.
I got 6 o'clock. You got 12.
That's right, man. All right. So you're going to wait. That's correct. Because jet fuel, you got to achieve a desired temperature of about 1400 degrees Fahrenheit in order to burn femurs and molars. So that takes roughly 2 hours. So yeah, you're good. Right answer. Once again, man, you got this going on. All right. It's been a couple of hours. The flames died down. You ensure that the femurs and molars are now dust, and you head back to your home. Mm-hmm. All right. So, do you, A, send Jim on his way, never to speak again, or B, double check, make sure that there's no evidence or materials that were left behind in the trunk of the car, anywhere near where you put the body, the drums, anywhere. You got to burn, clean, and bleach as necessary.
Yep. Go with B. Have to do that. I got to cover all of those steps right there because damn, man, once again, I'm involved.
Yep. Get rid of all evidence, right? No body, no crime. You've done a good job. So yeah, let's go back over. You did, you got 10 out of 10, man. You got 100.
Ooh.
I think you are the first guy to get that, in, interviews thus far. So
all right.
Awesome job, Pat. You
right
are
on.
A true, what was the movie with Wolf? We got to call Wolf.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah, Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction. You are Wolf. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about that when you said Jim pulled up in front of my house. I'm like, hey, do I have a sign in my front yard that says blank?
You're right. Yeah. Yep. And then most recently, John Wick. Who was the guy? What was the name of that company? The guys that come up and clean up everything for a couple of gold coins.
Yeah.
So you have proven to be a pro for that. I think you have a job with any of those guys at any given time. Because score of 100. Man, it was great talking to you, Pat. I appreciate you being on the show. As mentioned before, you can check out Pat at all of his known websites. I mean, he's got T-Max Inc. all over the place, easily found. Once again, you Google him, you won't have any issues finding him. His Squad, which is a great educational program he's got going. What I feel like is, you know, taking people to the next level, giving them skills that people used to know years ago, right? You're kind of giving them the things that they need these for today's world. Yeah, go ahead. Tell us
That's called the Pat Mack Keep the Blaze Alive Coaching Squad on Patreon.
There we go. Yeah, Patreon. So all of these links can be found at any of his websites or social media platforms. Yep. Pat, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming on here. I do appreciate it, man.
Clint, always a pleasure working with you on these projects, my man. You're a lot of fun, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And remember, everyone out there, you know, you can get this interview on the iHeart app where all of our previous season shows exist. You can get it at Apple Podcasts. You can get it at the YouTube channel. Make sure you listen, share, like, comment across the board. And remember, just keep it simple because crisis will complicate the rest. All right, Pat, thank you for coming on the show. And until next time, take care out there.
Bam. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Can You Survive This Podcast is a production of Calvary Audio and iHeartMedia. Recorded live from a secure location here in Dallas, Texas. Produced by Brandon Morgan, Jeff Apple, and Clint Emerson. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti. For Calvary Audio, I'm Clint Emerson.